This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and here I am once more with my co-host and his insights into data and information and surveys.
Okay, so I'm totally useless today because I think I'm going to start by talking about open source Linux distributions.
But you're going to talk about the data in the survey about open source Linux distributions.
Survey? What survey? We don't do surveys.
It is once more talking about the Perforce Open Logic open State of Open Source in 2025 survey report thingamajig. And yeah, we are talking about one of my favorite topics. I don't know why I enjoy talking about Linux distributions, but I just do. And yes, we are at that time where we talk about the various Linux distributions used by the organizations that responded to the survey. And it is once more a landslide for Ubuntu in the number one spot, which has been steadily gaining ground throughout the last 3 years. It was 29% back in 2023, 46% in 2024, and 56% in 2025. Some fairly significant gains there. But you know, these gains come at the sacrifice of others, and it's probably no surprise. But Jon, who's tumbling down the stats here?
Well, I'm looking at it, and the usual suspects aren't really tumbling down. I mean, sure, like 3 years ago, we had the Alpine Linux and Arch Linux revival or Genesis, or whatever I call them then. To try and plug the hole left by CentOS, but those have pretty much died down again. I mean, Alpine Linux is still up to 15%. The problem with these graphs is that it's not a this or that. You can tick all the boxes that you want. So the total, if you add up all the percentages, you're up, 300%, something like that probably. So I don't really see any big fallers. You apparently do. What is bad, because one of them should have fallen a lot more than it has, because it hasn't fallen. Actually, it went up.
Yeah, it's kind of disturbing that. Ubuntu is up at 56, nearly 57%. Debian is at basically 32%. But CentOS is still number three at 26%.
And 22% last year.
Yeah.
That's not CentOS Stream. That's the old, no longer supported, unsecure CentOS.
Yeah. CentOS Stream is all the way down right near the bottom, barely above SLES, SUSE, at 7% thereabouts. Yeah.
Which makes sense, because CentOS Stream is not supposed to be something you run in production.
It's not, but people are. Or at least it's Linux distributions that organizations are using today. That's how the question was done. But yeah, it is. It's not surprising to me that there's still so much CentOS out there. I'm not surprised. I'm just disappointed.
I am surprised.
Are you really though?
Yes. I mean, that it was going to take a couple of years. Sure. No, you can't just. I was able to just reinstall everything Debian here locally in a day. But for companies, that's a much bigger undertaking. And I mean, it's coming up to 4 years. So most of the companies should have gone through their refresh cycles now, because typical refresh cycles are based on the hardware contracts. These are typically 3 to 4 years. And that's basically where we are. So maybe this is just the last hurrah, but it's going up. I mean, if we're still at like 15% from 22 last year, but there's a steady decline, I would say, cool. Now, obviously, there is a service bias. These are not the same people that replied last year. This is a more European-centric survey this time. So this could just mean that CentOS was a lot more widely used in Europe and has declined over time. But we didn't start at 22% last year, but at 30%. I have no idea.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Hard to see, but still, a quarter of all servers are still running a out of support, no longer updated, no security patches, whatever. So this is, especially in the day and age where security and data leaks are ever present. I mean, you can't ignore them. How is this still possible?
Yeah.
For small companies, it's easy to upgrade. For big companies, they have compliance reasons to have to upgrade. So there's, I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty sad. It's pretty disappointing. We'll dig into this a little bit more because there's they unsurprisingly, given this fact, they kind of dig into it a little bit more themselves, which is good. But in terms of, like, you were asking kind of other big sort of shifts here, there's not too many, I don't think. The one that's maybe, I don't know whether I think it's actually surprising or not, probably not really, but the one that does seem to have, like, dropped a decent chunk is Amazon Linux has dropped from, it was basically 20% last year, and it's basically sort of nearly halved, so it's only about 12% this year. So that's a reasonable kind of drop. You know, Fedora's had a nice bump. It's gone from, you know, about, what was it? Last year it was about, just over 10%. Okay. Now it's about 15. But yeah, there's not too much of a shift in the others. There's like a lot of them have just lost a little bit. You know, Debian's had a nice little bump going from 23 to 31, but it hasn't had anywhere near the same jump as Ubuntu has had. So, yeah, it's sort of, it's interesting. I think the Amazon Linux change is
Survey bias. Europe was a late adopter of cloud. Amazon was the first cloud out there. So everybody who started on cloud started with Amazon Cloud and started with Amazon Linux. In Europe, cloud really only took off when Azure became also a dominant player. So I think we just started with a lot less Amazon Linux in Europe. And as this survey has more European respondents, I think that for a large part will explain that. Because if you're running something in Amazon and you're not using Amazon Linux, why? I mean, it's the Linux built with all the drivers and stuff like that on for the hardware that's underneath it. If you're not doing that, I mean, there's reasons to test stuff and whatever, obviously, for normal production. And cloud hasn't shrunk.
No. Indeed.
Although you could perhaps say that IaaS cloud has shrunk and SaaS has gone up. And that would mean, I mean, if you replace, I don't know, an Amazon Linux server that's running a database and you replace it with the RRDS, whatever it's called again, an Amazon service thingy, then you would, as a respondent, strike no longer add those Amazon Linux boxes while you're still using it behind the scenes because you don't, well, you probably know, but you don't count them as that because it's SaaS. Yeah. So that's maybe also a reason that SaaS became more prevalent.
Yeah, I think that is. That to me feels like the most likely reason for that kind of shift. Less infrastructure as a service, more PaaS and SaaS. Yeah, I think that's more likely to be it from my perspective. But who knows? But you know, we said we would dig a little bit more into the.
Yeah, I just want to add one more thing first. I mean, I know you're a fan of Ubuntu, but I still don't understand why Ubuntu is so prevalent in business organizations. Because don't forget, these systems are typically not laptops and desktops. These are on servers, right? I mean, there will be the occasional person like you who runs Linux on their laptop and takes the pain with it. But these are predominantly servers, right? Ubuntu is not a server OS.
That is your perspective.
No, it is. Ubuntu actually admits it.
No, they don't. They really don't.
It comes with a desktop. It comes with a user interface.
It can come with a desktop.
I don't understand it.
I know you don't understand. We've had this debate before, but you are wrong is where this boils down to.
I agree, you are wrong.
It is very, very heavily used in cloud-based server infrastructure.
But why? I mean, Debian gives you everything you need. It's better because Debian is way more stable.
That is your perspective. That is not shared by everybody.
Ubuntu has more updates, so the bad thing about Debian is it's old. I mean, all the stuff on the Debian server is old stuff.
Yeah,
but it's for servers. And that it's supposed to be old and crappy.
No, it's evil. And this is why you are wrong, because developers want the later libraries, the later packages, the later code, because they want to develop against the latest stuff, which is why that Ubuntu is a lot more prevalent in the cloud server space, because developers don't want to use crusty old versions of things.
But we don't have developers anymore. We have DevOps engineers. The days where developers created something that in production the system administrators could never release because it's all on this buggy, new, fangled crap, so we have to do it all again, is behind us, I've been told. It's DevOps now, so people who program stuff should also have in their minds how they will eventually put it on the
which
production
is why they're doing
and
it
then you
in
don't want
Ubuntu. Anyway, let's move on from this.
Okay, people, send us up by email. Who's on my side, who's on Dave's side here, because I will never be convinced that Dave is right. Here, this is just wrong.
I know we have this debate every year, Jon, and every year you're wrong, but it's fine, we're used to it
every
by
year
now.
You're wrong.
It's good that you agree. And to be clear, I'm not running Ubuntu, I run Fedora for what it's worth. Although my parents run an Ubuntu desktop, but there you go. Anyway, moving on,
instead of Ubuntu?
Say again,
why do you have Fedora instead of Ubuntu? What is your reason to not go to Ubuntu? I'm curious.
I prefer the look and I prefer the look and feel of Fedora. I prefer RPMs to Debs as well, ever so slightly.
Apt is a little less user friendly. I found with Debian.
There's not much in it, but it's just one of those things that I slightly prefer. That's me.
Ubuntu now uses Flatpaks mostly, I think.
It does have a lot of Flatpak here.
Which is, I think, another horrible thing on the server, but we're not going to talk about that anymore.
We're not, indeed. Anyway, moving on. We said that the survey would dig a little bit more into CentOS usage. And, you know, CentOS 7, which was the final CentOS release, was actually end of life June 2024. So it was, you know, just over a year ago now, the announcement of it being end of life or it going end of life and all that sort of thing was quite some time before that. But the final end of life was just about a year ago. 40% apparently of the largest enterprises have still got some CentOS somewhere, and according to the survey, and again, you know, this is a certain amount of survey bias here, but largely speaking, CentOS usage did decline in both North America and Europe, but in other parts of the world, particularly Asia and Latin America, there's still a lot of CentOS out there, which, you know, doesn't... That sort of makes sense. Those parts of the world that struggle a bit more with change happening.
That's compliancy pressure.
Yeah, likely. But the slightly scary thing is...
At least they're honest.
Yeah, true. When asked what the plan is in event of newly disclosed CentOS vulnerabilities, nearly 30% of people responded with, "I don't know." Now, again, to be clear, there is a lot of survey bias here. There was a lot of respondents that were developers and engineers, and I wouldn't necessarily expect them to know what, you know, the plan is for that. So there's an element of survey bias in this, but
I disagree. I mean, it's even the lowliest developer should be protesting that their stuff is going to land on a CentOS box, because they will be the one, if the thing eventually does break and spill all the data on the streets, it's going to be their fault, because they didn't speak up. Security is the responsibility of everybody in the whole company, from the lowliest to the highest, the leftist to the rightest, the centrist to the diagonal, whatever. Everybody should be occupied with this. And this is not something that has gone under the radar. It's not something we talk about a lot because it should be a thing of the past, which apparently it isn't. But this is something that, yeah, I mean, I don't know, honest, which I respect, so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there is a sort of, I don't know whether it's a, it's probably not a light at the end of the tunnel, but, you know, there is at least a little bit of good news that about 13% of organizations actually have an in-house development team that provide the fixes and patches for CVEs, but that's a very, very small slice, and it's a lot of work.
And how do you test it?
Well, yeah, I mean, 3.7% do not scan code for security vulnerabilities, and do not.
And you don't know it's broken. Don't you fix it?
Yeah, and 7% don't patch CentOS CVEs anyway. So that's disturbing.
Well, I mean, if it's an air-gapped environment, it might not be a big issue. So I think 7% might just be the air-gapped representation here. But
It's still not great practice. Mm. And just under 20% of folks are working with some other LTS sort of vendor that provides patches to them, which doesn't surprise me that those kind of organizations are out there.
That's so wrong again. I mean,
I know.
If you add them all together, that's 13, 15, and 18, that's 28, 38, that's 46%. That's almost half, or more than half. I look at the pie chart, my math must be off. More than half are just going to keep on using it on purpose and hopefully patch everything themselves.
Bonkers.
Themselves or a company they hire to do this. I mean, that's bonkers. No, please no.
Thankfully, while they might not know exactly how they're going to handle this, when asked what they're going to replace CentOS with, 30% of them are going to replace it with Ubuntu. Again, continuing the discussion that we had earlier, but we're not going to reopen that particular can of worms. And then let's see what's next.
I mean, Rocky Linux and CentOS Stream are high up there, which I think are not good choices looking at the adoption about. I mean, Rocky's still up at some percentage there, but.
Yeah, but it's only 11%. Like, more people answered, I don't know what I'm going to migrate to, which was 15%, than chose either Rocky or CentOS Stream or Debian or anything else. And only
7.5% go to Debian.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, personally, for me, anything Red Hat that is not Red Hat Enterprise Linux is now tainted. I mean, if you're going to pay for licenses, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, fine, no problem. They have support, they're good people, even though they're in IBM now, they're still good people, probably. That's a decision you make, you pay for the thing, and they're the biggest company out there, no problem. But most of the other flavors are probably going to be unlicensed, although some third parties probably managing them for you, but the licenses themselves are quote-unquote free. Since Red Hat pulled the CentOS / CentOS Stream thing, for me, there is no way I would long-term plan using anything Red Hat derivative, if that's the right word. Fedora, CentOS, whatever. It just doesn't make sense because it is clear that Red Hat, the moment that Rocky Linux becomes popular, as popular as CentOS, they'll do the same thing again. With Debian, you're never sure. Nothing is certain. But it's a non-profit organization, it's a foundation, blah, blah, blah. That simply can't happen. They are not dependent from an upstream big checkbook. CentOS always was, and it went great until it didn't go anymore. So I don't understand why. I mean, Ubuntu, the biggest one, Ubuntu being a derivative of Debian, if I can call it that. I mean, those were the same three, let's call it that. I mean, yes, I can see that. As long if you're on Ubuntu and Ubuntu goes away, you could fairly easily go to Debian. Probably that will be a much less big change. So I can see where that happens. But Debian being so low, maybe Debian is so low because Ubuntu is so high. Maybe that's how you have to look at it. Because if you add them together, it's 40% almost, which is plus the 15%. I don't know. That's more than that's only more than half. Yeah, that's still. Kind of surprised Debian is so low. I'm not surprised that Red Hat Enterprise Linux is so low, which is even lower at 5.66% because it's just so expensive.
Yeah.
And it's so bad. I mean, I've always had this, that has this reputation. I mean, every customer I ever talked to, they always had like a whole hundreds of CentOS boxes and one Red Hat Enterprise Linux box. And it was always that one that broke. If there was a bug somewhere, it was always on the Red Hat Enterprise Linux box. Because that's the one that had support on.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into that.
I'm joking. It's just people have often abused CentOS as free Red Hat Enterprise Linux, obviously.
Yeah. Anyway, let's see if we can wrap these last...
Can you say OpenSUSE is dead?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Which is sad. I mean, it's still used a lot. I mean, the previous graph, OpenSUSE was still at 8.6%. It's less at 4%. But yeah. It's really not there.
Anyway,
it's too bad.
Let's see if we can wrap up this this kind of side of things as we're running a little long. But in terms of, you know, what's next, you know, what are the challenges with managing, you know, a now end of life distribution? Unsurprisingly, 52% of people said security patches. You know, that's the most obvious answer. So, and you know, second for that was compatibility issues, which I think is a bit of a weird one, but
no, that's a good one because sometimes you have libraries that aren't available in the other distribution thing, different versions. I mean, I've in the past always run a lot of CentOS and a couple of Debians because I had running I had a Dubiquity server, for example. Their software was a thing that only ran on a certain version of a certain thing. Mm-hmm. So moving, that was for me the biggest problem to move away from CentOS in the past because some things simply didn't run easily. It's open source, you can always do it yourself, yes, but you want some creature comforts there. Talking about Ubiquity, I actually replaced my VM with a cloud key, so a hardware module from Ubiquity to avoid it in the future. So I wimped out.
Yeah. But, you know, unsurprisingly, joint sort of joint in terms of responses, about 30% with compatibility issues was the topic that you mentioned earlier, maintaining compliance at 30%.
Yeah, stupid reason, because that's just security patches.
Exactly. So really, they should have just added 30% to the 52%.
Yeah, and I hate the fact that downtime is the next one at 20%. I mean, that means that these people actually never patch. Because if you patch a kernel, you need to reboot your Linux system.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but there's a difference between planned downtime and unscheduled downtime. And I would hope that they're talking about unscheduled downtime here, but... No.
I think it's basically, if you upgrade this thing, we have to reinstall the whole thing so we don't have the servers up and running for a couple of days. Well, buy a second server, put it next to it, put it there, and that's how I did it. Mm. I'm probably making it too simple here, I agree.
I think you are, indeed. You definitely are, because the final bit of data on this is people asked how long they think it will take them to migrate off of CentOS. And yeah, this is also not great because, you know, the folks that'll think it'll take 6 to 12 months is about 17%. The folks that'll think it'll take more than 12 months is about 26%. So you know, adding both of those up comes to a pretty scary. Well over 40%. Thankfully, a bit under 40%, 35% of folks think it'll take less than 3 months. So maybe it's not all bad news.
Well, if it takes less than 3 months, it should have already been done. sorry.
Maybe they've been working on it this past year.
Yeah, but it only takes 3 months. Oh, yeah, they outsourced it to one of the SIs. That's the problem.
No, no, it only takes 3 months from now. They've been working on it for a year, so it's a year and 3 months in total.
Now, for the one that are taking more than 12 months, there's probably some government, public sector stuff in there. Because in some very regulated situations, changing this stuff kind of has to go through a whole rigmarole of checking and compliancy and papers shuffling around. And that can, sadly, really take a couple of years. Anybody who worked at NATO or EU or something like that?
And some of this is also probably going to align with, you know, major replatforming that organizations are doing. Like if they've got a major update of a particular service sort of coming down the line, why not do these things at the same time? And, you know, they'll suffer a little bit longer and they'll kind of get compliance exceptions and that sort of thing in the meantime. And then they'll just, you know, wrap an OS upgrade in with a major replatform shift or a major kind of application update or whatever it is that they're doing. So, yeah,
that's a great point. I think a lot of this will be also taken into a cloud movement.
Yeah.
If you have to change it anyway, well, we're not going to sell the hardware anymore. We're going to go to the cloud. So this hardware is still valid for another 2 years. So let's start planning that in 2 years' time when the hardware needs to be replaced. We don't. We go to the cloud with XYZ services.
Yeah.
And probably a lot of those things also try to go to cloud, fail to go to cloud because it did wrongly or had bad partners, whatever, and had to do it again and again. That also delay things probably.
Yeah.
Didn't think of that. It's a good one.
Yeah. But so we will come back and revisit the next set of interesting insights, but I think we're at the end.
This is Dave's gentle hint to me to start rolling the outro. This is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast, become a patron. Contributions do help us get this stuff in the air for almost 10 years now. You can go to our website at www.rollingout.org. There's links to the Patreon page, information podcast. And if you have any feedback, and again, our big debate on Ubuntu good or bad for servers, please send it by email to podcast@rollingout.org. Until next time, my name is Ubuntu is for desktops only. Jon?
Dear. My name is Jon is wrong, Dave.
I look forward to disputing that again next week. Goodbye.
See you then.